This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Episode number 123. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And I just realized we're not like other shows where we say like 123 and it's like episode 12.3. It's like we've actually done 123 episodes.
Right,
like,
right.
Like this a season is number.
Season one, episode 23. Or right. Yeah, yeah.
Because other shows I do are like that. And I'm like, no, we're legitimately 123 episodes.
Right,
baby.
That's the TV numbering for like, you know, Lost season six. So episode 610.
Exactly.
That's not us.
We're legit.
We are linearly legit.
Totally. So this is the show, the science fiction and fantasy show, where we talk about all the great books we've been reading, say what you guys are discussing in the forums, and go over the news of the week, of which there is a fair amount.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a decent amount. And this is, for us, our first post-video audio show. We still have two more video shows that we'll post, though.
Yes. I guess we're not recording any more video episodes in the foreseeable future. Well, hopefully. Hopefully we will be in the foreseeable future. I'm confused.
Yeah. Someday we will do video again, but we don't know when is what she's trying to say.
Precisely. So lots of focus back on the podcast, which I know you guys are excited about. And
we
I am as well.
You. We were petting you right now like a puppy.
That's creepy, Tom.
Good audio podcast.
Good. Yes. Fluffy audio podcast.
Scratching you under the chin.
So, Tom, what are you drinking?
Speaking of scratching me under the chin, I'm drinking a Fat Tire Amber Ale from New Belgium Brewery. I believe this is in Fort Collins, Colorado.
All right. I'm drinking a Pinot Noir. I did not catch the name. It's like a stranger
in the
night.
Well, that's not helpful.
I know. I don't have... I'll try to get the link in time for the show notes. I just grabbed it literally out of my sack of wine. I have a sack, a giant sack that I keep
all
my wine
in. Is it from Lot 18?
No, it's not. This is from the Chronicle wine sale.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. So a big old sack that you carried out from the big old wine sale.
Yeah,
got it.
So it's somewhere between a $5 and $15 bottle of wine that I got from the wine sale. from my unending sack. That sounds terrible. Should we move on?
Well, now we've both insulted someone.
There you go. So now it is time for the Quick Burns, which is our news of the week.
Yeah, let's start off on SF Signal. John DiNardo is a big fan of a time travel story. He says, I loves me a good time travel story. And Amazon has posted cover art for the Mammoth Book of Time Travel, SF, 25 mind-bending stories. You got Fritz Lieber in there, Michael Swanick, John Varley, Kristen Catherine Rush, Robert Silverberg, Cage Baker, good stuff. Good folks in there. And I am a fan of a time travel story myself.
As am I. All the cool kids are doing anthologies these days.
That's right. The coolest of kids are fearfully anticipating put together anthologies.
Jumping headfirst into the anthology world. But not Gene Wolfe. He is coming out with a new standalone novel called The Land of Cross. The Land Across, not The Land of Cross. And it is set in an imagined country in Europe. And according to John DiNardo over at SF Signal, it sounds a little bit politically charged. It sounds a little bit like there may be some points, political statements that it is making in this telling.
Well, yeah, because apparently it involves crossing the border in this imaginary country, having your passport taken, then being released, and then being asked for your passport and going, well, they took it, and then nobody believing you. And it turns into this kind of Kafka-esque trap. And I guess this story could be ripped from the headlines with all of the stories about border crossings and what are your rights at a border, et cetera, et cetera.
So it doesn't sound very sci-fi to me or fantasy-ish. You know, like Gene Wolfe stuff we've read in the past. I mean, I don't know too much about
right.
it yet.
There are supernatural agencies at work. We have failed to mention that. Okay. So that's where the sci-fi, that's where the genre comes in. It's an imagined country. But yeah, it does seem a little less like way out there than some of Gene Wolfe's other work, for sure.
Well, I guess we'll see. Yeah, I'd like to pick that one up. It sounds a bit different from other.
The other thing I'm really excited about is they have a publication date for The Republic of Thieves by
Scott Pitch. I'm super excited about this. I thought we talked about this on the video show. Did we not? I guess I must have seen this pop up on Goodreads at some other point.
No.
Because I knew about this and I was excited about it. So that, of course, is the third book in the Gentleman Bastard series. We read the very first, which was The Lies of Locke Lamora.
Right. And I read Red Skies. Now I can't remember the actual name of it. Red Sails.
Apparently, Scott Lynch is already working on book four of the series, The Thorn of Emberlane. So this is going to be bigger than a trilogy. This is like a straight up series at this point.
Red Seas Under Red Skies.
There you go.
Thank you.
You got
Thank you, Internet. Yeah.
You feel better?
Yes, I do. I love these books, and I am so excited for The Republic of Thieves. That is, I say so many things are going on my reading list. Mm-hmm. I am going to read this.
Well, I'm excited because I'm getting caught up finally. Like, I am on the final book of, I'm ready to start reading some other books and other series that I started at this point. Because mm-hmm. I finished all my vaginal fantasy picks for this month. I've read our current book pick, though I'm going to go back and read it again. Mm-hmm. But I feel pretty confident that it shouldn't be too much of an issue. And I'm almost done with the final book in the Codex Alera by Jim Butcher. So other than that, I've got nothing on my plate. So I'm excited to start heading back to some other books that I, you know, some other series that I've left behind in the past and start picking up with those stories again.
You mean you've read our next book pick, not our current
Correct.
One,
Correct.
Right?
I have also read our current one. Thank
well,
God.
That's true. You have. but you're not going to read that one again.
No, I'm not going to read that one again. I'm good. I'm good on that one for now. And also on the Wurt Zone this month, we have more details on the world of Ice and Fire. Bantam Books has released more info, according to the Wurt Zone, about the world of Ice and Fire, which is that companion guide that I think we've talked about a bit in the past. It's due for publication on the 29th of October, 2013, and it's going to be about 290 pages in length. It looks beautiful. It looks really pretty.
It's going to have all new content. Mm-hmm. That is historical material about Westeros, written by George R. R. Martin. So I think what's cool about this is it's not just going to be like, we took all of the facts from the published work so far, and we're compiling them together. And then as soon as the next book comes out, this will be, you know, out of date. There's going to be things in here that you won't have known about. Now, I guess you can consider that spoilers, but my guess is that none of these will be spoilers for what's going to happen in the book. They'll just be further details about the past that might have been revealed in future books, but but will kind of fill in the backstory, which is pretty cool. And there's a 30-page excerpt written by Martin that you get. So you actually get some new material, too.
So it's not like the Silmarillion. I mean, there's...
Right.
It's not like that kind of compendium of content. It's a companion book. It's stuff that you can read while you're watching the show or reading the books. It fits along very nicely with the existing content.
Yeah, it looks like it's like they're doing an honest to goodness history book of Westeros, which just I love that kind of stuff.
Tonight, tomorrow night is actually the premiere party in San Francisco. I don't know if you knew about this.
No.
For the Game of Thrones.
Because I don't live there anymore.
Yeah, I guess who was not invited? This guy who has two thumbs and was not
you
invited.
You also have two thumbs you weren't invited?
To the geek-oriented premiere of the Game of Thrones season kickoff.
Well, good.
I'm a little sad. I'm a little let down. My husband especially was like really let down that somehow I did not make this happen for him.
Oh no.
So
Ryan.
I don't know why. I thought I was on their PR list. I get all their stuff.
We used to be.
They send me their stuff.
Yeah. What happened?
I'm a sad cat, but it's okay. It's fine, I guess.
Just, it's not still... like you're going to refuse to watch it.
No, I'm not going to like boycott it or anything. Or should I?
Or will you?
That would literally be like a so ineffectual, so yeah, wildly ineffectual, and counterintuitive to everything.
They've got us over
for.
A barrel.
Totally.
Plus, all the rest of us didn't get invited either.
I know.
Except for there's like two people in the audience quietly going, I got an invite.
I'm really excited about it.
Good, have fun.
Well, good for you. Good for you. I'm glad you're happy. I'm so happy for you.
J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter community, Pottermore, is going to be launching on PlayStation Home in April. According to an announcement on the blog, you'll actually be able to step inside Diagon Alley and board the Hogwarts Express as an avatar. And once you're inside those 3D environments, you can experience things like book herding, testing your knowledge with quizzes, collect and share trading cards, and take part in an illicit wizard's duel.
Ho-ho! I wonder if home is fun yet, being in PlayStation Home.
Well, that would make it fun, wouldn't it?
It maybe. Pottermore?
I mean, home is what you make of it.
Home is what you make of it.
Where the heart is.
I just liked to build things in my condo.
I've never done anything in home. I'll be honest.
As someone who worked for Sony for many years, I really should have put more effort into my home experience. And I just, it's not like they didn't give me any free stuff. You know, I didn't get like free housing stuff.
And
that's
those
really 63%
of you that are really confused right now, home is Sony PlayStation's like 3D environment. We're not actually talking about our houses.
No, Sony did not pay for my current apartment or furnishings of any kind. They gave me like some Sony themed furniture or something for PlayStation Home, and I was like, well, this is lame. What am I gonna go do now? I hung out in the Uncharted area a bit. There was a fun Uncharted area. There was a bar they could go get fake drunk in.
Well, and the Pottermore thing sounds really cool.
It does.
I mean,
it all sounds really cool, Tom.
Yeah, I guess you have to try it first, right?
Yeah, you gotta get in there. gotta give it the old go around. But I would try this. I haven't been in PlayStation Home in a couple of years, but I would go back and check it out for this.
I might even pull my old PlayStation out of its box that it's still in after I moved.
Aww.
But the Xbox is in there too, just to be fair.
All right, should we touch on the calendar?
Let us do. March 19th is today, and The Gate Thief, Mither Mages by Orson Scott Card is out. Queen Victoria's Book of Spells by Ellen Datlow and Terry Windling. Shattered Pillars by Elizabeth Baer and Quintessence by David Walton are all available for your purchasing enjoyment.
All right. And then we also have on March 22nd, the Sword and Lander Video Author's Guide to Peter F. Hamilton.
Who was a pleasure to talk with.
He was indeed.
I might add.
Yes. And moving forward, on the 26th, we have You by Austin Grossman, Red Planet Blues by Robert J. Sawyer, Deadly Sting, Elemental Assassin by Jennifer Estep, Hellhole Awakening by Brian Herber and Kevin J. Anderson, Angelopolis by Danielle Trussoni, The Scrivener's Tale by Fiona McIntosh, Wolfhound Century by Peter Higgins, and The Age Atomic by Adam Christopher, friend of the show.
Two-time guest of Sword and Laser, both audio and video.
Yes. Great friend of the show.
March 29th is the last of the video episodes, Sword and Laser Book Club video wrap-up of Down Below Station by CJ Cherry. And then coming up April 2nd will be our next Sword and Laser audio podcast, where we will kick off our next book. And also on that day, Protector, Foreigner number 14 by C.J. Cherry comes out. New book from C.J. Cherry. Life After Life by Kate Atkinson. Prophet of Bones, a novel by Ted Kosmatka. Without a Summer by Mary Robinette Cole. Odds Against Tomorrow by Nathaniel Rich. River of Stars by Guy Gavriel Kay. The Forever Night, a novel of the Bronze Knight by John Marco. And The Exiled Blade, The Assassini by John Courtney Grimwood.
Assassini.
Assassini.
All of our Italian listeners and Italian-speaking listeners are like, you guys, come on.
Becca.
That was terrible. Becca speaks Italian?
No, she's part Italian, though.
Oh. Well, then she doesn't know how to speak Italian. Becca, you don't know. Don't you judge me. You judge
she's
my
like, I wasn't even judging you.
She's like, I wasn't even listening to the show, and now...
I just posted. I don't listen.
I don't listen. That's crazy. But for those of you who are listening, this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. What should we recommend this week? We forgot to...
I was thinking we could recommend an R.A. Salvatore book. Ooh. Because he was our most recent interviewee mm-hmm. on the video show. And they have a big Dungeons & Dragons promo going on right now if you go to the audible.com website. So I don't know. I'll say Neverwinter Saga Book 1.
All right. Legend of Drizzt. And there
was somebody was asking about this on the forums, like, where do you start with R.A. Salvatore? And several people who are big fans say, you know what, just find book one of something. Don't worry about trying to read them all in exact order, mm-hmm. but don't start in the middle of a series. So I'm going to say Legend of Drizzt, Neverwinter Saga book one.
Typically a good idea to never start in the middle of a series.
Yeah, don't start with book four of anything.
I would not generally recommend that. It may be okay. You may be able to slide by with some Terry Pratchett.
Yeah, maybe.
General,
that's true. Discworld is a whole, all the rules are off.
Yeah, there's no rules in Discworld. No rules. But if you want to get that golf audiobook, there are rules in Disc Golf.
Oh, there are.
There
you're
are
right.
actually rules.
I take that back.
If you want to pick up an R.A. Salvatore novel, head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That is audiblepodcast.com/sword. Tell your friends, tell your family, and thank you for Audible for being a great sponsor for many years.
Yay, Audible.
Yay. Shall we move on to TV, movies, and video games?
Yeah, we got a nice posting here from Calvin. This is actually neither TV, movie, or video game, but it's in our TV, movie, and game section of the Goodreads group. Calvin says, hey, don't know if this is news or even relevant, but I have heard Neil Gaiman's name a few times in the forums, so what the heck? UK listeners of Radio 4 or iPlayer-capable people can listen to an all-star cast of an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's works.
Wait, Benedict Cumberbatch is involved in this?
Yes.
Wait, what?
All-star cast, I'm telling you. Now, this is radio, so you have to listen to it. And for us, you're probably going to have to actually go to the web to get it, but you can listen to it over here in the U.S. Mm. And Benedict Cumberbatch. Who else is there? There's a ton of names. James McAvoy is in this. Natalie Dormer.
I don't understand how to find it. I'm confused by their website.
The on now?
I don't understand technology.
The listen button up at the top?
I'm fine. It didn't find anything for Neverwhere.
Oh,
I just want to download. I want to download the whole thing.
Wait. Oh, I don't know if you can download. You might just have to stream.
No. Oh, Tom Mahomey found it. Okay.
Oh, good. Oh, nice job,
Tom. It's still streaming, but still, it's better. They spell program funny.
Yeah, with an M-E. Programmy.
Sorry.
And the nice thing about BBC Radio, unlike BBC TV, is they don't rope it off. So it's a lot easier for folks around the world. There's Magda from Poland was saying, hey, it's working great.
Awesome. That's very
Neverwhere
cool.
Neverwhere is really nicely done.
So I have never seen Veronica Mars.
Neither have I.
But apparently,
Eileen
this was a
watched
big
the
deal.
Entire series on Netflix, and I was in the other room, and I actually bought the theme song because I kept hearing it over and over from the other room.
So I know a lot of you out there are huge Veronica Mars fans, and you guys were talking in the forums about the Kickstarter to help make a Veronica Mars movie. It blew up. I mean, it was the most unbelievable success in Kickstarter history, probably, I'm guessing.
Fastest to a million ever. They're at 3.695 million right now as we're recording this.
Yeah, and there's still 24 days to go.
Yeah.
So that's pretty incredible. It was my Twitter stream was blown up because people don't know how to use Twitter and were saying the @Veronica Space Mars movie. I was like, oh, it's just like years and years ago.
It's flashback.
It's all that again.
I think what got people really excited about this, there's a lot of crossover. A lot of genre fans liked Veronica Mars. They liked that story. Mm-hmm. But there's also this idea of, an awesome old television show that we loved that got canceled before its time could get resurrected. Joss Whedon. And of course, Joss Whedon got asked this and he directly answered it. He's like, I knew as soon as I saw the Veronica Mars thing, I was going to have to deal with this question, you know, and I, of course, want to go back to the Firefly universe, but I am way too busy right now with Marvel and everything else. So no, there are no plans to Kickstarter Firefly, but that doesn't mean there won't ever be. Mm-hmm. I just don't know when.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing there, but that's essentially what he said.
That makes sense. I think it gives people excitement for a lot of stuff. I mean, there's so much potential there.
Yeah.
Kickstarter is just a huge resource for creative people. And I think it's wonderful. And I'm really happy for the fans who are so excited to see this get off the ground and actually happen.
No, it's fantastic. And there's been some controversy around it because they're not kickstarting the entire Veronica Mars movie. They just said if we can make $2 million, that will convince the studio to go ahead and greenlight the project. Mm-hmm. So the studio is still going to pay for the majority of the production because it's much more than $2 million that they want to spend on the production. And there's still issues with like making sure all the actors, I mean, Kristen Bell's on board. She's the main character, but other actors need to sign on now if they're going to make it. And so that could potentially derail it. But this is kind of a cool way for Warner Studios to say, well, let's gauge the fan response. If you can get them to actually give you $2 million to make this, then it's worth it.
I love the, did you see the $10,000 pledge surprise? If you pledge $10,000, you get a speaking role in the movie.
I did. I was like,
you're the waiter.
That's ridiculous. Like, I don't have $10,000, but if I had $10,000 that I just, you didn't, I'd totally do that.
Yeah.
if I was a Veronica Mars fan, it wouldn't make sense for me, even if I had $10,000 to blow, because I'm not a big fan. But if I was a big fan of the movie, are you kidding me? If it was Firefly and I had that, oh, mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
Well, your only line would be your check, sir.
That's fine. I don't care. It's a speaking line. I get an IMDb credit out of that.
They say, you can't ruin it by being hammy or they'll cut you. So you could still get cut. Your $10,000 could be for nothing if you were too much of a ham.
Well, just don't be a ham.
Just don't be a ham.
Take direction, people.
Take direction. Just your motivation is turning over the table, as they say.
Yeah.
You just want the table for the next customer. That's
kind of a nightmare. When you're like, we're going to let someone buy into having a line in this movie. Mm-hmm. First of all, SAG-AFTRA is going to have something to say about that. Mm. But yeah.
That's a good point.
I'll be interested how they handle that.
Yeah. So moving on to a little bit of book discussion. Of course, we are still reading Down Below Station for the next 11 days or so. But Valerie made a post in the forums about the relationships between the married couples. She says, one thing that really struck me in this book was those relationships. Damon and Elaine, Emilio and Maliko, even Satin and Bluetooth are all functionally bonded pairs who work together during times of adversity and never let their relationships get in the way during a crisis. I could not think of another book, sci-fi or otherwise, that featured happily married couples who stay happily married throughout the novel where the marriage was not the main focus of the book. It seems like if you find a couple truly happy in their marriage, it's basically a death sentence for one or both characters. Down Below Station was very refreshing to me on this note, but I'm curious if anyone out there can think of another novel with power couples like this one.
You know, that was really good. I could not, and that doesn't mean they don't exist, but I could not think of anything easily that had that many. I mean, I can think of other power couples that last through novels, but usually they're the exception, not the rule, right? The source of drama is essentially the breaking up of a strong marriage or a couple, you know, and the problems they go through and the tensions they go through. And what Cherry does in this is she doesn't have everything easy. Obviously, Elena and Damon, they go through horrible stresses, but it's not the like, and therefore they were torn apart, you know? Mm-hmm. And you don't have the fighting couple, the divorced couple, any of that sort of thing. And yet I didn't even notice it. It just felt fine to me. It wasn't like it was something that stuck out as unrealistic.
Yeah, and there's some suggestions in the forums. Mallory S. Said that Lois Bujold also writes strong pair bonded couples in her Vergosian series. Shannon Lee and Steve Miller also have several strong pair bonded couples. And also Sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, says the later books of the Parasol Protectorate are very much like this, in my opinion. It's one of the things I enjoyed most about them, and I can definitely back that up for sure.
Yeah, I see this as sort of Cherry making a decision that she's not going to fall into the, you know, couples cheating, fighting, falling apart trap, and try to find sources of drama elsewhere. And I always go back when I see that kind of thing to what I read about Gene Roddenberry telling the Star Trek writers, the conflict can't come from the humans fighting because humans have figured out their differences. You have to find sources of conflict elsewhere. And granted, there's some bad episodes of Star Trek out there, but I think some of the more brilliant episodes might not have happened if he hadn't laid down that challenge, because that kind of barrier forces you to up your game.
Yeah. Actually, now that I think about it, also the Mary Russell series by, why can't I remember her name? We've interviewed her on the show, Laurie King, Laurie R. King.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of course, that's a classic love story. Well, it's not classic. Now, she invented it, but it's a now classic love tale.
I don't know if this is just this, you know, a sample bias here, but all of the examples of this kind of story are all female writers.
They did. She did mention
Steve Miller.
Steve Miller,
but he's co-author.
Correct.
So
interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but
not that surprising.
Yeah.
I don't think that's very surprising.
Why don't you think that's surprising?
Well, this could be a long conversation.
Okay.
But I think that women tend to have pay more care to those kinds of relationships.
Well, there is the thought, I don't know what a better way to say it, that that women tend to value stable monogamous relationships more than men. And I'm not saying that's true or not, but that is sort of an idea that's out there. And so that may be playing out, you know, whether it's genetic or sociological or psychological or just accident. I'm not going to try to say, but it could be playing into that for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into Barrier Sword, which is our feedback.
Well, wait.
What?
Next book.
Oh, do we have to talk about the next book?
Well,
oh,
yeah,
you're right.
Because,
there it is. I missed it
because
it
there was a little bit of, because I put it in the calendar. Next we do book. Announce it in the final episode of the video show. The Dragon Riders of Pern will be our April book. But a lot of people were wondering, well, do I have to read all 800 some pages of Dragon Riders of Pern, or is it just Dragonflight, which is the first book of Dragon Riders? And Dragon Riders of Pern is one of those things that's most often put out as a single volume. Mm-hmm. But you can buy Dragonflight alone, and in fact on Audible they sell all three individually, so you can't get them all as one audiobook because that would be ridiculously huge, so they break them up into the three books.
Okay, well I'm buying the, oh that's funny, you know, when I bought it was $9.99 and now it's $12.89.
Did we make the price go up?
I don't know.
I bought it at $9.99 too.
That's weird.
Amazon's like, oh, it's the Sword and Laser pick, huh? Jack those prices up.
You know what? No, Kindle edition is still $9.99.
Oh, you're right.
That's
I'm looking
paperback
at the paperback.
Version.
Yeah, and okay. The Kindle edition is the one I bought.
That's the one I bought too.
Okay, never mind.
I could have sworn it said $9.99 in the main price, but maybe I was looking at something weird.
Yeah.
Who knows? Okay, so don't panic. Amazon is not watching Sword and Laser to try to jack up their prices on our picks yet.
So what are we going to do? Are we going to do it like Gene Wolfe or Barry Hughart and say, you're welcome to read the whole three, but we'll just talk about the first one on the show? Or are we going to make people read like the whole darn 834 pages?
No, I'm going to say we should definitely have people read Dragonflight. And then if they want to continue on to the next two books or the next book or whatever, however else more they want to read, that's fine. I mean, we can leave the forums open for people to discuss that for sure. But I think it would be safer and maybe more productive if we just had Dragonflight be the main pick.
All right. That makes sense. I agree with you there. I'm with you. Especially because I actually finished reading Chronicles of Masterly and Number 10 Ox, but it was nice not to have to finish it for the book discussion on the show. I just kind of leisurely, I've almost gotten to the end of it, and it's really good. I've enjoyed it.
Awesome. Yeah, then that's what we will do. We'll have Dragonflight be the main pick, but we'll include the link to the full three books for Dragon Riders of Pern.
And that way, if you do want the audio book, you can just get Dragonflight on audio and listen to that, and you're good.
Nice. So that is going to be our pick for April. Jeez, year's flying by.
Yeah, it is.
Look at it go.
There it goes.
There it goes. I couldn't believe today was the 19th already. That was like shocking to me.
Yeah, you know, this morning on Tech News Today, Sarah Lane was saying the same thing. She's like, so almost April. Who's upset about that?
I wouldn't say I'm upset. I'm just more surprised.
She didn't use the word upset either, but it was basically like, you know, how shocking is that?
Totally. All right, well, so now should we jump into Barrier Sword?
Yes, let's do.
Hopefully I didn't use the sound effect too early. I'll have to remember that and edit. Don't want to, yeah. So we have a question on Goodreads. This is coming from Mapleson.
It's actually an answer, not a question.
As an answer, as a reply to the question of the British Science Fiction Association awards being only for British people, the answer is no, it's open to all nationalities. For novels, they have to be published in the UK in that year, but for artwork, novellas, and short stories, they can be published anywhere in the world. This year, there is one American, Kim Stanley Robinson, in the finalists for novels.
Oh, with 2312. Okay, good.
Gotcha.
Very nice.
Very nice.
And Warren even threw in some thanks on that to Mapleson for posting that. Mm-hmm. We also have a thread from Mark, who pointed out a list from the New York Review of Science Fiction. David G. Hartwell, the author of the piece, says, I restricted myself to works of science fiction, which eliminates certain works valued by the sci-fi audience, but published out of genre or specifically as horror or fantasy, and came up with the 200 significant science fiction books by women from 1984 through 2001.
Ooh, should we go through these or?
Yes, let's read all 200.
Let's read every single 200. Well, the top of the list is C.J. Sherry, so that's nice.
Well, it starts in 1984, so you got Channer's Venture and Voyager in the Night out that year.
Mm-hmm. Tons of stuff. So
Ursula K. Le Guin, obviously, all over this. Nancy Kress.
So if we ever need help ever again finding
Sherry
an author,
Tepper.
Finding a book to read by a female science fiction author, this is our go-to list.
Well, you know, and what's great about this is a lot of people go, well, I just can't think of any. Well, here you go, right? Janet Keegan, Carol Severance, Karen Joy mm-hmm. Fowler, Pat Cadigan, Judith Moffat, Gwyneth Jones. I mean, these are in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
This doesn't even catch up to when you get to the 2000s and you're talking about looking for Maureen McHugh. A lot of these names are the same throughout, like Sherry Tepper and Ursula K. Le Guin. And he doesn't, as he pointed out, he doesn't include like the Parasol Protectorate because that's sort of out of genre. He's going like very solidly in the center of the genre here.
I wanted to add a little Barrier Sword for this week. I was on a panel at Engadget Expand this past weekend with John Scalzi and Daniel Wilson, who wrote Robopocalypse, talking about future technology and how science fiction of yore has informed product design and our thoughts about the future and how we kind of interpret technology. So the video is up on Engadget. So if you guys want to check it out, I will include a link in the show notes.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I want to take a look at that myself.
And it was great. We got really good feedback on the panel. So I hope you guys enjoy it.
Got an email from Mark who says, I was wondering if Sword and Laser would ever cover military science fiction like the epic Honor Harrington series by David Weber or the Lost Fleet series by Jack Campbell. David Weber has another wonderful series, Safehold. I've read all of the books in the series and would love to see your take on them. Thanks for the wonderful show. Well, thanks for the question, Mark.
Yeah.
I think my only problem with these, and Steve Gibson, who does Security Now on the Twit Network, where I also do shows, is a big fan of Honor Harrington. He's a big promoter of that, and I want to read them. But doing series as picks, not that we don't do it, but it's always troublesome for us. So that would be my bigger objection over that, rather than the fact that it's military science fiction. I don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the issue. I think we just haven't gotten around to it.
And that's the other thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people are like, why haven't you picked this yet? I'm like, because we only get to pick one book a month.
Mm-hmm.
And there are thousands of deserving books. We will never pick them all.
Yeah.
I think I wrote that on recently, either on the blog or on Goodreads, that if we don't pick your favorite author, it's not because your favorite author isn't deserving of being picked. It's because we will never pick all of the deserving authors. We will both die, even if we do this podcast up until the end of our lifetime. Unless the singularity comes, we will run out of time.
Yep, pretty much.
There just are too many books.
Oh, that's sad to think about.
I know. I used to think about when I worked at the bookstore, right? And you're just covered in books all day long. And you're like, I want to read that. I want to read that. I want to read that. And it just kind of hits you like there is not enough time to read all the books you want to read.
All of the books. Oh, well. Well, I guess I'll just have to try harder.
I am going to live forever so I can read all the books.
Yeah. Well, I have wanted to read the Honor Harrington series, so maybe we can do that at some point.
That's, well, now that bug's in our head, Mark. Maybe. Yeah.
That's what happens when you guys email us. You put a bug in our heads.
Got to pick something for May. Just saying.
All right. I think that's all we got for this episode. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website, the newly redesigned website, is swordandlaser.com. All of our discussions happen over on Goodreads. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-7-SWORD-6. And we will see you soon.
Adios.